WCRI's festival series highlights one of our community's greatest musical traditions, the Newport Music Festival. Since 1969, the Newport Music Festival has hosted over 2,000 concerts in Rhode Island's most prestigious venues, while presenting world-renowned and emerging classical music artists from around the globe. The Newport Music Festival has left an indelible mark on our music history here in Rhode Island, as well as around the world. Now, here's host Mike Mano, along with the festival's executive director, Pamela Pantos.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the WCRI's presentation of the Newport Music Festival. We've been doing this for quite a while now, episode 37. I'm Mike Mano. Pamela Pantos is with me as usual. And always a pleasure, Pamela.
Oh, thank you, Mike. It's actually our pleasure to be on the radio with you. So thank you for all your time and everything that WCRI does for the festival.
What do you have for us tonight?
Well, before I forget, before we go on to what we're doing this evening, I need to remind our listeners about our upcoming concert on October 27th with Sarah Davis Buchner and Stephanie Chase at the Art Museum. And the last radio show we did was about this concert,
right.
And the podcast is on the WCRI website.
It is. It's great music, so check that out.
Right. So the concert is, as we said, on Saturday, October 27th. The doors open at 6:30, and there's a reception for half an hour, and there's a 7 p.m. concert, and again, amazing repertoire that they're playing together and as soloists, and, you know, everybody loves them. They were here this summer, and such fun.
And it's very easy to get tickets. All you have to do is go to the website, newportmusic.org, newportmusic.org, and check it out and support the Newport Music Festival. All right, Pamela, what do we have tonight in mid-October?
You know, Mike, I always find it fun to celebrate the birthdays of composers. So tonight we are highlighting just a few of the composers who were born in October, just like you.
I was born in October. Yes, and you were born in October.
September. Last day of September.
Oh, okay. Well, it was close.
Yeah, you were very close.
You're almost 30.
Thank you. There are far too many composers to play, but I'm going to first give a little list of composers who were born in October because I think people might think that was fun. Paul Dukas, Alessandro Stradella, Heinrich Schütz, Camille Saint-Saëns, we've played a lot of his music, Giuseppe Verdi, Ray Vaughan Williams, one of my favorite composers, Charles Ives, Franz Liszt, Ned Roram, American composer, Johann Strauss Jr., Georges Bizet, ta-da! Domenico Scarlatti, Niccolo Paganini, so and it goes on and on. So tonight, we're going to do a little chronological program with some of my favorite composers. I sort of picked out my favorites from the list.
All right.
Beginning with Domenico Scarlatti. He was born in 1685 and died in 1757. He was born in Naples and actually emigrated and lived in Spain for a great deal of his life. And I just want to tell people a little bit about that history. He was born to a very famous composer. His father, Alessandro Scarlatti, wrote a lot of vocal music. And so by the age of 15, he had already secured an appointment as an organist in Naples. And actually, Scarlatti had a pretty good life, unlike a lot of composers at that period of time. He took over his father's position later as music director, and then he composed operas and things like that. By 1713, right, so he was born in 1685, so that makes him 28.
Mm-hmm.
He had already established relations with the Vatican, and he held the position of music director at the Julian Chapel at St. Peter's, right? So here, he always worked for the greatest people. Then he abandoned his post at the Vatican, and by 1720, he was in Lisbon, and he was music director to King John V of Portugal. He also taught music to the king's younger brother and to the princess, Maria, and that she remained his patroness for most of his life, and he wrote his approximately 500 harpsichord sonatas under his period of time when he actually moved to Spain as part of her court and lived with her in her court in Sevilla first for the rest of his life. Interestingly enough, maybe some of our listeners have seen that movie Farinelli about the great castrato.
Oh, yeah.
He was friends with Scarlatti.
Oh, there you go.
So what's really interesting about Scarlatti's works is it actually documents for us better than any other chronicle that we have, written or otherwise, visual, of that period of time in the court in Spain. Because he uses all of the different instruments. He writes drum pieces for state processions. He uses horns and oboes for royal hunt and fireworks. And so actually historians have used his works to see what life was like at that period of time. So absolutely fascinating. What happened after, you know, he was with the Queen of Spain is his music became lost. after the end of his life, his music really, it just sort of disappeared. You know, when we think of Bach, Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, you would have thought he would have influenced them, but it wasn't mm-hmm. that kind of a lineage. So it wasn't until 1906 when an Italian pianist, Alessandro Longo, first actually started digging up all of his pieces and started making sure that all of his pieces were published. So the interest in that period of Baroque, high Baroque, in Spain and previously Italy came pretty late in our musical, right. You know, musicological studies. So anyway, I'm fascinated with his music. We had the wonderful Ian Watson play some of his pieces last summer, and we'll be doing hopefully the same this summer. So I'd like to hear one of Domenico Scarlatti's harpsichord sonatas. This is KK 491 in D major with the brilliant Trevor Pinnock playing, with whom I had the great pleasure of doing an opera. So here's Trevor Pinnock, and we'll listen to that.
Well, for people that are not familiar with harpsichord, that certainly is a great example of a different sounding instrument.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that I really appreciate about this festival is that many individuals or pianists take the Scarlattis and they play them on the piano. But, you know, we really try to keep it as authentic as possible because the composers wrote these pieces with a particular sound in mind. And so when we have the opportunity to work with a great harpsichordist like Ian Watson, it's wonderful that we can play these pieces as they were intended.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. What do you have next?
So we're going to fast forward about 100 years to Niccolo Paganini, who is, as our listeners may know, considered one of the greatest violinists of all time. He was born in 1782 and died in 1840. He received music lessons from his father, who's also a musician, when he was about six. And again, one of these incredibly precocious musicians. He had, again, success like Domenico. We're talking about happy musicians tonight, not all the ones who died young and sad. And he, very early in his career, became a freelance soloist and started concertizing all over Italy. What's interesting is he actually ended up performing for 2.5 years through all of Europe. He went to London and Vienna and Paris, and his trips made him extremely wealthy. Paganini was, like Liszt, one of those performers who literally drove their audiences crazy. He had incredible charisma, and people believed that he was sometimes possessed by the devil. I mean, people really thought
that kind of crazy,
because he was such an extreme virtuoso. However, despite the fact that he earned all this money, he was a gambler.
Well, and I'll take care of the money.
Right? And so at one point, he actually was so poor, he had to pawn his violin. And so he couldn't play without a violin, obviously. And so a very wealthy French merchant lent him an instrument. It happened to be a Guarneri. And later, he refused to give it back and actually then just took off with the Guarneri. So again, kind of a shady character sometimes. I think that his genius as a player sometimes overshadows a little bit of his composing. But the wonderful thing is he did write a lot of his pieces down. We know of his 24 caprices. And he also wrote sonatas for violin and guitar, quartets for violin, viola, and guitar. So it's really wonderful that we have all of this repertoire. What is really interesting is that he practiced and practiced as a young man, and then after the age of 30, he rarely practiced. The muscle memory was so strong that he was just able to get up and perform. He also did all kinds of crazy things like we might expect from almost like a Las Vegas composer. He'd actually break strings on his violin on purpose and play the rest of the piece on one or two strings.
He would have been smashing guitars.
Yeah, sort of. Yes, yeah. Like absolutely. So anyways, at the end of his life, he actually attempted to own a gambling casino because he was so crazy about gambling. He moved to Marseille and then he moved to Nice. And at the end of his life, he unfortunately died and he was quite poor. But today what I want to play is, rather than his well-known caprices that I'm sure our listeners have heard, let's listen to his violin concerto. We don't hear this very much, and this is so beautifully played by Hilary Hahn. So let's listen to the third movement of his violin concerto number 1 in D major, the Rondo Allegro Spirituoso.
Excellent. Well, we will do that, but we're going to take some commercial messages first. So we'll listen to those messages, come back, and play that piece that's a little bit lengthy. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Mike Mano, and Pamela Pantos will just remind you what that piece was you just heard.
That was Hilary Hahn playing the Violin Concerto No. 1 in D major, the third movement, the Allegro Spirituoso, by Niccolo Paganini. As you know, Mike, opera is near and dear to my heart, and yet, other than the opera nights at the festival, we don't perform much opera music, or even arias. So even though we told our listeners last year that the Newport Music Festival began as an offshoot of the Metropolitan Opera, I wanted to remind people of that. So the festival, when it was first founded, Glenn Sauls, the first general director, came from the Met. Hmm. So I figured this was my chance tonight to play some Verdi, probably the greatest opera composer of all time. So Giuseppe Verdi was born in Italy in 1813, and as we know, produced many huge, beautiful, successful operas. He died in 1901 in Milan. And if you think about it, 1901 isn't very long ago. You know, you think of Giuseppe Verdi as a composer from the great past, but really he wasn't. And so he developed a musical talents at a young age, like our other composers this evening, and he lived in Busseto. He applied to go to the Milan Conservatory, but he was too young, and despite his non-conservatory training, became who he was. He actually was composing and living as an organist in his youth. His first opera, Oberto, when he was writing Oberto, he was married, and during this period of time, both of his young children died, and subsequently, within 2 years, his wife died. So along with that first opera, there's a lot of sadness, and so he was very preoccupied with, and it took him a little while to come out of that before he started really composing again. But don't feel too badly for Giuseppe Verdi. He met Giuseppina Strepponi and lived with her for the rest of his life. So what's interesting about Verdi is once he started writing and he figured out a new form that was not peace, applause, but these long movements where a duet will merge into a trio, he actually broke the old Italian form of opera. I mean, it was something completely different. He creates melodies and it was very theatrical. So he really grabbed the operatic form and completely changed it. As we know, he wrote the great operas Rigoletto, Trovatore, Traviata, Don Carlo, Aida. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. The piece that we're going to hear tonight, if you said to me, Pamela, you're on a desert island and pick maybe five pieces of music you get to hear, this would be number one.
Wow.
This is my favorite piece of music.
That's big.
It's the Messa di Requiem. It's his Requiem. And what's really amazing about it is it's really an opera in religious form. So it hits you because of its poignancy and because of the form, and yet at the same time, it's such a pure, it's really written as pure music. It is absolutely stunning. So we're just going to have a little listen to this tonight. So we're going to start, sorry, I'm not starting with the beginning, but we're just going to jump into the Dies Irae and the Tuba Mirum. Again, being close to Halloween, I thought this would be a good place to start. So we're going to listen to Sir George Scholte conducting the Chicago Symphony and the Chicago Symphony Chorus with Leontine Price, Janet Baker, Veriano Lucchetti, and José Van Damme. I'm not sure if it gets any better than that. So again, we're going to hear the Dies Irae and the Tuba Mirum, and then we'll come back.
We will listen to those two, take a short break, and be back.
Thank you.
We are back. I'm Mike Mano, having a pleasant evening as usual, sitting with Pamela Pantos from the Newport Music Festival, and we're talking about October Babies.
We are, and yeah. Now we're talking about Verdi and the beautiful Verdi Requiem. You know, Mike, I sang this piece in the chorus when I was probably in my 20s, early 20s.
So, like 10 years ago?
Yeah, yeah. And then when I became a soloist, I was very fortunate. I sang the piece quite a bit, and I actually studied the piece with the great soprano Renata Scotto. And it's interesting. Sometimes people think that the mezzo part should be a big, beefy mezzo, but the problem with that is then you don't have the lightness to go in sort of a head voice. And there's a lot of places in the piece where the mezzo does have to sing almost like a soprano. And this is one of the solos the coming up, the Liber Scriptus. Will you hear that? There's a portamento, which means literally portare, which means to carry in Italian. And you carry the voice from a low note to a high note, which you'll hear in the opening here. And that's why someone like Janet Baker, because she had those easy high notes, almost, you know, soprano-like, was perfect for this role. So let's hear the Liber Scriptus, and then we're just going to come back for a brief moment.
Oh,
Pamela, I think we have time for one more piece of music. I know you'd like to get a lot more in. But
I'd love to play the whole piece if we could, but not tonight. So as you heard, that mezzo voice had to float and then really expand in the middle voice. You know, people talk about a Verdi mezzo, but Verdi actually wrote for several different kinds of mezzo voices. You know, there's the big amneris kind of sound, and then there's this kind of sound, which, again, you know, they used to call a soprano falcon in the French repertoire, which means, a meaty soprano who's got some great high notes. So in this last piece that we're going to hear from tonight, the Lux Aeterna, this is the hardest moment for the mezzo. You can't let loose. You're in a trio with the bass and the tenor, and you have to sing like a light soprano, and then come back down and sort of have that meet in the middle and the tenor singing above you. So technically, it's a very difficult piece. And again, I think that's why we have such great recordings of the Verdi Requiem, because most people wouldn't attempt this piece unless they were really sophisticated singers. So it's very exciting, of course, to hear Janet Baker, Leontine Price, Verano Lucchetti, and José Van Damme singing this. So again, maybe we're going to have to come back and do a whole Verdi program.
Sounds like it. Sounds like there's lots to do there.
Okay, so we're going to hear the Lux Aeterna with Janet Baker, again, Sir George Scholte conducting.
All right, we will listen to that, and then we'll see you next week, right back here.
Thank you for listening to WCRI's Festival Series featuring the Newport Music Festival. For more information on the festival, special seasonal concerts, to purchase tickets, or to donate, call 849-0700 or visit newportmusic.org.